Are there any questions or anything to say? Yet?
I have a question.
Where's that? Oh.
I wonder if you could speak a little about how you can be feeling very peaceful and delicate with the world, a sense of its meaning and play, and then almost as quickly as the clouds coming over the sun, it vanishes and there's a sense of desolation or sort of, I don't know, existential loneliness.
Mm.
Something so unfathomably empty.
Mm.
And then that goes and there's homecoming and welcome, and then that goes.
Yeah.
Mm.
So maybe a few things. Could you hear what she said? No. So she mentioned feeling, I think it was like this, how is it? How can it be? That there's peace and a sense of tenderness with the world. And then, as quickly as the clouds might change here near Melbourne, desolation, existential loneliness, and then again, maybe some peace. Very vivid, very full experience, and then again, clouds, rain, sun. So we're used to that kind of weather emotionally and mentally, even if we don't always notice. So we could start with noticing how it works mentally and emotionally, if the question is also partly, how does that happen? How is that possible? We can be thinking and be very sure about something, really, really sure about something, as a thinking process, and then it can be 5 minutes later that we're very sure of the opposite. So we've all experienced that. And emotionally also, it would be good to notice in a day when we feel good. It's so much like the weather. It's amazing. Here you've gotten more used to it, but when I'm traveling around, it's getting easier, but it's really hard to really think I might need my down coat when I go to Melbourne, which I did use this morning, even though it's supposed to be springtime down there. And it's more or less warm where I was. It's sometimes really hard when you're in a warm place to think of really packing for cold weather when you're going somewhere. You know it's supposed to be cold, it's likely to be cold. But to actually pick up that wool sweater and put it in the suitcase, you almost don't want to touch it. Or the other way around. And similarly, when we're feeling good, it seems like we're good. And when we're feeling bad, it seems like we're bad. And it's hard to really get that we're going to feel good again, or we're likely to feel down again. And to just notice that during the day, like how many times we feel really good, how many times we feel pretty bad, really bad, neutral, etc. And it can help to get some sense of the weather patterns and what influences the weather patterns. The kind of impersonal part of that, the conditioning aspect of that. What kind of triggers are there, etc. And naturally in that investigation of noticing highs and lows, or decisions and then counter decisions, or opinions and counter opinions. We do naturally start to discover another ground that's unaffected by all that. And we start to gradually feel more comfortable in that quieter place. And then there are subtle and more, we could say, more spiritual kind of, or existential sort of experiences. And letting them also be sunny and cloudy and rainy and hail and windy and quiet can also just help us get relocated in another place a little farther back. So you may have heard the word vipassana, and usually people think of vipassana retreat, vipassana meditation, as equal to the Goenkaji style of sweeping through the body, 10-day retreat. But there are many different techniques that are vipassana techniques. But what vipassana means is seeing from behind. Pas is to see, and vi is before or behind, and na is the way, a way or a technique. So to actually see from behind, to find the deeper eyes, that if my eyes can watch the ups and downs of the emotions, of the thinking, of the energies, of the subtle, maybe we can call subtle states or spiritual states, then there is something that can see that's located somewhere else, that's not going through all the weather. And that's sort of where trust kind of lies. That's where trustworthiness and trusting and trust lives. And we have been mentioning fear a few times, and we haven't been mentioning trust so much. That happens to be part of what I want to speak about today. So that's one thing to say with Maya's exploration. And another thing would be, that usually we're less accustomed, and our equipment also is less accustomed, to being in that peaceful place. And being in the peaceful place is, there's a lot of fluidity and openness and tenderness, and things can shift much more easily, which is a healing process. It's a good thing. But sometimes the shift, look, there's something uncomfortable, and that then triggers us into, from the discomfort, into what Eckhart Tolle calls the pain body. And so, which means we feel a little bit of pain, and then the whole of our pain comes back on, and we're plugged into the pain or the fear system, and we're less plugged into that living quality. And so just knowing that that can happen, and that we can just practice spreading back out into the living. Even when there's pain, there's also living. And letting the living quality start to be more and more primary. That it can be primary and embrace the pain. Whereas from the pain, from the fear, we can't even feel love to embrace it. So from love we can embrace fear, but from fear we can't embrace love. So there's room for everything from the living place of living, the living quality or aliveness. So that's just practice, but that means that the system starts to learn new pathways and get softer, more fluid, more responsive, wider, more connected. And as we have the wider connectivity, then some of those maybe more somber, or yeah, we could say more somber, subtle states that do have a sense of aloneness, for example, existential aloneness in some form. There's also the connection, there's also the aloneness, which is actually empowering, that it's possible within my lifetime to be free, no matter what's happened to me. And that can happen. I can be part of that. So I don't need everyone else to get arranged in the right way to push me towards my freedom. It can happen through my lifetime. But when there's the hair trigger response to pain, So there's that, it's a somber experience. It could be somber, it could be somber. It has a seriousness or a gravity. But then our system translates it as threat, and our defenses go on. It can happen that way. So if we could keep somewhere like our toes or one hand with that, what's real and deep in the experience, even if it's also, whoa, the gravity of it triggers a pain response. We could still sometimes stay with this. There's also a subtle beauty and truth in the experience sometimes. It's a flavor of truth, a flavor of aliveness that our system wants to take as a thread and partly gets that there's a truth in it. Does that make sense? Sometimes the pain overwhelms us and we're in our armor and that's it. And one last thing, especially important, as just a kind of theoretical framework for the process that's happening by being quiet and loving life, is that as things start to drop their defenses and be less hard and armored, more alive, more responsive, more in tune, then naturally there are also the shifts that happen where something that we have not been able to feel because it was too painful to feel, there's a reason that we blocked it out, come, and we can feel them. And not to take that as the opposite of progress. So sometimes we think, oh, I felt so good, I was so peaceful, I was so happy, and then, I don't know why I was crying for 3 hours, or I was so angry for 6 days, or hated everyone, or whatever. And it's easy to take this really linear storyline that I was doing really well and then I fucked up. And this as if it's all my fault and as if I even know what's happening. And it does happen that way when there's a good momentum. The opening allows something hopefully to come up, be met. We don't need to necessarily know the story and process that. We might, but then it does release itself. Because it's not needed. We don't need to keep experiencing the trauma. So I think the poem of the day is very relevant also. It's also Wendell Berry, if you forgive me. Not from this book. It's from a little tiny book called Sabbaths. Sabbaths that I found next to my bed in my father's house this summer when I was visiting. And I keep forgetting to ask if it was put there on purpose or if it just happened to be there, but either way, it's wonderful. And the first poem of the book called Sabbaths, so number one. I go among trees and sit still. All my stirring becomes quiet around me, like circles on water. So I just want to, again, bring an echo in of that we might be starting to talk about trust and what allows or helps trust to surface. I go among trees and sit still. All my stirring becomes quiet around me, like circles on water. My tasks lie in their places where I left them, asleep like cattle. Then what is afraid of me comes and lives a while in my sight. What it fears in me leaves me, and the fear of me leaves it. It sings, and I hear its song. Then what I am afraid of comes. I live for a while in its sight. What I fear in it leaves it, and the fear of it leaves me. It sings, and I hear its song. After days of labor, mute in my consternations, I hear my song at last, and I sing it as we sing. The day turns, the trees move. So first, I just want to ask if there's any part of the poem that especially, or a line or word that speaks to anyone. It's not a metaphor. It's also not a metaphor, yeah.
I love the line where your tasks just lay, where you left them like cattle sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's how it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My tasks lie in their places, where I left them, asleep like cattle. It's so interesting having the cattle here with us. And today it struck me the way that I know that they graze all the time. I know that we have horses at our place in Spain, and that's what they do almost all the time. You know, maybe 80% of their, or 90% of their waking time. They have their lips on the grass. And I guess cattle take some breaks to chew it inside their mouth too, but maybe because of the day and the on and off rain or something, that cattle, so cows.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost a feeling of their devotion to grass, their devotion to the way they were just so sweetly bent over the grass, and how they're made for that. They're so big, and then they just do so little. And so that can give a kind of new perspective on what we think of as our tasks. They're really big, and they do so little, but it's sweet, and there can be a devotion in it, in that just chewing. Also, just the sense of cattle usually are animals that someone has for a purpose, which we won't go there right now. And for that to be asleep, that purposedness, just to be in its place, like we don't have to sort of get rid of it or cross off the whole list before we can be quiet. We're just quiet anyway. And whatever those purposes are, just where they are, asleep. And that's enough for something else to start to happen.
What is the significance of how he places what is afraid of him coming first?
Mm-hmm. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. What do you think?
I was pondering it.
Yeah. So this is what I think. I think that as we allow things to quiet down and all the doing to just be asleep for a while, that trust does need to build, to rise, to kind of start to be able to move. And the first process is for the inner atmosphere to become trustworthy, to show itself as, or not to show itself. For the trustworthiness that lies asleep to have the chance to wake up and fill the inner atmosphere. And I think before we can really, I think the natural process is how he's describing, before we can really meet what we're afraid of, we need to be kind of meetable and almost prove friendship, almost. I don't think that we can properly meet the actual experience of what we're afraid of. Without that kind of disarming. And what is in us, so it, this also does, of course, happen in an outside place. The same thing can happen in an outside place. But also in the inside places. If what is afraid of us, so the way that we usually pay attention is actually more about control, controlling my self-image. Because I'm so hard on myself, I can't bear to see anything wrong. And so then I don't see what's out of alignment. And any little sense of criticism or failure, you know, floors us. But then we turn to the whip, we turn to control and repression as a way to manage. So it's kind of like we survive that way, but we're not really living. So to come out into living within ourselves, to come out of the shell in ourselves, to live within ourselves. There needs to be the presence of this living, fluid welcome, a welcoming presence. So that, because what is repression? Repression is something that's not allowed. Why is it not allowed? Against the rules, it's wrong, it's going to be punished. So unpunishing. And so all the little thoughts and energies and emotions that normally would hide as soon as we would turn our attention, they would definitely run away. And that's, I don't want to say that's the only reason we get sick, but that does make it hard on the body because they do tend to hide in physical ways. But when our vision, our sight, our gaze, our attention is of welcome, of actual openness, then what is afraid of us comes. And it does live for a while in our sight, and that's all that needs to happen. We don't have to have big, fancy, expensive tools to work it out. Unfortunately, I'm sorry if you've spent a lot of money on a lot of diplomas and so on, but we can find a way to use that information and not let it use you. But it's not so much needed. And so then there's the further step. So already there's some sense of welcome, whatever it is, partly because we realize we don't even know what it is. We're afraid of fear. We're afraid of anxiety. We're afraid of anger. We're afraid of loneliness. We're afraid of shame. But maybe we can simplify it all. We're afraid of fear. And when we realize we don't even actually know what fear is, there's a little bit more openness and a little bit of it can show itself. And just live a while in our sight so it's open. It's okay. There's fear and it's okay. There's anger and it's okay. There's sadness and it's okay. There's confusion and it's okay. There's rejection and it's okay. Whatever we're afraid of. it lives a while in our sight, that's already a big change. A big dawning is starting. What it fears in me leaves me. So when we see that we can be together, then the further or final disarming can happen. Like if we still had a gun somewhere in our pocket or even in our hand, like it's apparent how nonsensical. Doesn't make any sense. And the fear of me leaves it. Of course, the gun is gone. It's interesting too, if you have any chance to be with children, to play with this kind of principle or process with children. And it's the same thing with the inner world. It's all the different things that we're afraid of are like children. When we stop using fear as the method of getting the result that we want. So the illusion of respect, for example, we use fear to get the illusion of respect. We overpower things to get the illusion of calm. To feel how that is, and then to play with letting this natural rewinding, unwinding happen. And a lot of times we'll be at a loss because we only knew that one way of overpowering to get the result we wanted. But it's good to be at a loss and not give up. Like to be at a loss and out of love, so with children, whether the inner or the outer. Whatever situation that we care about. We're at a loss, but we care. We don't leave. We just live a while in the sight of not of being out of control, for example, not knowing how to handle this. And then something comes. And it's not based on fear, it's actual human respect, which is a rare entity. And understanding and coordinated creativity between oneself and the other. So that's maybe why he calls it sings. And I hear its song. Anything else in the poem that got your interest?
Say to me, they're much more afraid of you than you are of them. And something about humility.
Yeah.
And we're here that it's something like to do with what you're saying about children, this fake empowerment that is not real. And with the cows, as soon as I stopped trying to, have this defense, if I could be little and stay little, it was fine between us.
Yeah. So that can help us understand fear and trust a little bit better. That very often we don't know that we can trust a situation. Sometimes because we don't have experience or we've never heard of anyone ever being able to be around cows and be safe or whatever. You know, when we watch the news, like that's what it feels like. The world is a place that you can't actually be safe in and no one is, sort of. But as Mahatma Gandhiji said, as long as the news is still reporting the bad things, what that means is that's what's newsworthy, that's what's news, and that there's still a majority of nonviolence actually happening. Doesn't mean there's not danger, but that does indicate another pathway to navigate danger. So the possibility that there could be trust with cows, for example, there could be, it could be not needed to be armed. And that by arming ourselves, we get into trouble, we get into conflict. And by coming back to what we are, which is smaller than a cow, there can be communication. Sometimes verbally, you just tell the cow, I'm right here, I'm gonna walk by you. And I'm gonna go through the fence, but and I'm coming back. And whether they understand or not, they hear your voice traveling. They hear your tone of voice, etc.
Do you mind reading it one more time?
I'd be delighted, because I love the poem. I go among trees and sit still. So we can really feel that. All my stirring becomes quiet around me, like circles on water. My tasks lie in their places, where I left them, asleep like cattle. Then, what is afraid of me comes and lives a while in my sight. What it fears in me leaves me, and the fear of me leaves it. It sings, and I hear its song. Then, what I am afraid of comes. I live for a while in its sight. What I fear in it leaves it, and the fear of it leaves me. It sings, and I hear its song. After days of labor, mute in my consternations, I hear my song at last, and I sing it. As we sing, the day turns, the trees move. So something has been silent in him all along while this labor was going on. And then he's still silent and he hears his song. I hear my song at last, after days of labor. We might say that that might be those fairly rare moments of kind of rejoicing where we're conscious of some kind of spiritual experience. Some kind of, if we think of spiritual as something that's vast, something that's beyond what we think we are. And then it's a separate line that he says, and I sing it. So he hears, I hear my song at last. And I sing it. As we sing, the day turns, the trees move. We hear, we sense something like an echo that calls us, that resonates with us, that maybe even shakes us. Because we've gotten maybe a little comfortable being quiet. Quiet seemed to be good, quiet seemed to be working. Everything was happening in the quiet. And then all of a sudden we hear our song. And it's another slipping into singing it. It's a song that you sing. And as you sing it, so as he says, I sing it. As you sing it, the experience that happens is that we sing as we sing. And who is the we? Is it like the song and he? Or is it just that it's everything? Everything in the way that it comes through you now that it's clear. And now that you accept you're a singer. And all that happens is that the day turns and the trees move. And also the momentousness of that. Like Maya described, that sense of, I forget her exact words, but I translated it as tenderness with the world. She said fragile, I think, delicate sense of the world, with the world, I think she said. So the importance of like taking in the sense of to accept the song that's yours and to accept that you're singing it, that you can sing it. And then to accept again that when you sing it, it's we. So that the I is not about the I is about we. What the I is in service of is the we. There's actually a use of that I. It has a usefulness. The way that we use the I now, the way we use the I as a protection, isn't useful. It's very, very painful and very, very destructive and confusing. But when all of that starts to unravel through letting things live in our sight, in each other's sight, letting the fear unravel, so unfold, untangle, which is a kind of labor. And there is the double meaning of the word labor in English. So hard work and that happens getting ready for the baby to come out of the mother's womb. Which is an appropriate word, both the sense of work, but labor, so the sense of, especially when it's Wendell Berry, like the sense of working the land, sense of tiring, heavy work that's simple and fulfilling in itself, and also the sense of labor as in a mother giving birth, where there's actually really, really powerful contractions, and then a pause. Then there's something more quiet, and then again, contraction. So maybe we'll just go a little through the poem, pausing here and there as if we're like going along the stream and the water pauses with different rocks. So I go among trees. I think we can get the feeling for him what that feels like. And for some of us, that's the same. We feel that way when we go among trees. But what are the other, where do you go to sit still? Whom do you go among? What do you go among? Where do you go? What gives that sanctuary? That's kind of open and empowering and, open-ended sanctuary. Where, when we go there, we find ourselves sitting still. That's more a place that's an invitation to rest. So it may not be, there might be a place that you know that you go. There might be people that you know where you go. It might be a way that you have of coming to by singing or by walking in nature or petting your dog or whatever, that place opens up and you go among trees and sit still. And so there's that first stopping of some kind. It might be stopping that train of thought, stop, or that conversation or that complaining or that outer movement or it might be a big or a small stopping that job, or stopping that thought, or just being still, pausing. And then it takes some time, after a while, all my stirring, becomes quiet. And we can also learn to enjoy that process of the stirring becoming quiet. That also has its music, rather than thinking there's something wrong when it's not immediate, thinking that we should be better. There's a beauty to that organic process. And I love how he says, all my stirring becomes quiet around me. So there, it's not a sense of like trying to cut something off when we say stopping a train of thought. It's like, enough. But not like, get out of here. Get away from me. It's here. And it's settling. It's just needing permission to settle. The stirring becomes quiet around me, like circles on water. And so exactly it's like that. There's a beautiful teaching from a Korean Zen master from about 1,000 years ago named Shinul. And he talks about a big stopping and a big quiet. He says, if it so happens, maybe kind of by luck, that someone has a freeing, transformative stopping of the mind. And it's done. The work is done spiritually. Shinul says, there's still a momentum that the waves will still be crashing for a while. So whatever work that needed to be done is done, but the waves still crash for a while. So very much like waves, maybe there is even some kind of wave principle involved. Circles on water, it spreads out, and then that comes back and meets itself, and gradually it's mirror-like. My tasks lie in their places where I left them, asleep like cattle. So isn't it nice to have a poet's description and permission, knowing that the tasks will always be there, chomping, but they can be left in their places. And there they are, in their place. They're not out of place. There they are, in their place.
So is he saying that he's going to focus on that particular experience and leave what he normally has to do alone?
Yeah. And I think, as Maya said at the very beginning, that comment that escaped her, this is not a metaphor. There's the way that this is... He's probably literally describing a day that he had, or some days that he had, as well as using that as a metaphor. So it's being enchanted by that delicious stillness and the beauty of that song, of the process of things coming quiet. And the appropriateness of that it's that it's possible to leave tasks lying in their places. Because the tasks are unending. And so it's up to us, it's up to us to make there be the sleeping time. And the gentleness of that, they're just asleep. We didn't kill them. Again, like as Melissa was saying, we didn't need to use a big stick. Just leave them and let them sleep. Then, so it's really like then, comma, what is afraid of me comes. So he gives it an emphasis and an importance, like it's a happening. Then, so it's like the next dimension opens. What is afraid of me comes. And it is really like it is a new dimension that we're less used to. That what is afraid of me comes, and I can actually see that I am intimidating instead of a victim. So we shed the victimhood mode. And we see that we have been intimidating, like scary. We've been scary to things that felt small around us. What is afraid of me comes and lives a while in my sight. I also like that there's a bit of respectful distance as well. It lives a while in my sight. We're not like snuggling. We're not really having that kind of moment. It lives a while in my sight. There's a kind of dignity and respect of a new kind in this new dimension.
It almost feels like also, for me, and it says that you've almost stumbled upon something in the, like it could be the bush.
Yes.
An animal.
Exactly.
You might fight the
exactly.
Right, and you're waiting and it's a stare off for a moment.
Yeah. And if possible, if we could even think of it doesn't see you, but you see it. It doesn't feel your stare as a stare. And your stare isn't a stare. Staring would be like... The gaze is such a softness that what is afraid, that would normally be afraid, doesn't feel that and can come. So like an animal, it would be like we are next to a body of water in the forest. All is quiet. And water is where animals come to drink. They will come. And so when we're quiet, then we can be there with them. It lives a while in my sight also gives room for that. Like what's been afraid of me can just come and get what it needs and go. It's not about me. I'm no longer interfering. The eye is no longer interfering in, or my defensiveness, my victimness, and therefore aggression is no longer interfering with a natural nourishment happening. And it would be as if that an animal came that would have been afraid of me, had its drink, and then saw us. And saw that it had been okay. It was safe. It had been already safe. So and it's almost another bottom drops out, another dimension. And then the song comes. The fear of me leaves it. What it fears in me leaves me. And the fear of me leaves it. It sings, and I hear its song. So, in that other dimension, so to speak, there is also possible this exchange that feels like music. And it even feels like music in that sense of today someone was talking about fear of singing in public, which you have twice a day the chance to play with that. Now that we've lived for a while together by the water, you've been in my sight, I didn't hurt you. The poison left me and the fear left you. And then what's possible? So the kind of communication inwardly or outwardly that becomes possible, it's like an... So we have this kind of skin on the outside of our body that keeps more things out, and we have the skin, the different kinds of skin and membranes on the inside of the body that are more permeable, where more communication is possible. It's more tender, less protected. So the song and hearing the song, that particularity of that, so maybe we're afraid of fear and fear comes and we don't take it as an insult, and so the fear stays and lives a while in our sight. And what that fear was afraid of in me, that I'm going to try to squish it and get rid of it because it's an insult, I shouldn't be afraid, or whatever, it's making me shake and all of that, leaves me. And the fear of me leaves it, and it's allowed to be, and it's just a human energy. And it even loses the name fear. It's one example. And then it sings. So the aliveness in it can move in a different way that is creative. that has it. The beauty of that energy is not just visible but audible. We can sense it. We can almost drink it in. We can hear it. Then, comma, then what I am afraid of comes. So instead of on our program, we're supposed to deal with our fears. We better get to it, you know, hurry up. The retreat's going to be over tomorrow. And I haven't sort of dealt with it. In its own time, what I am afraid of comes. I live for a while in its sight. So we might be trembling. But we don't run away. We don't have access anymore to that victimhood. There's a deep confidence in life that it's something is going to be workable here. There's going to be a way, somehow. What I fear in it leaves it. And so the disarmament has completed. Just like in dreams, sometimes people talk about a monster that they're in the dream, the nightmare, then running away from. And then sometimes the possibility of turning around and meeting the monster. And then the monster, when we actually look at it, is more funny than scary. Or the person that we might have been running away from in the nightmare, when we turn and face, it's not a nightmare anymore. And it's not an other anymore. And it's not armed. What I fear in it leaves it. So my projection is gone as well. And the fear of it leaves me. It sings and I hear its song. So not only my fear of the thing, but what I was afraid of, and therefore not incorporating, literally not embodying, not living. We get to hear that song, those qualities. So in the movement exploration in the morning, I don't know if you felt sometimes whoever came more comfortable with certain body tissue or organs. It might have been easier with bones and harder with skin, or easier with skin and harder with muscles or whatever. So there are certain qualities that we're easy with and that maybe we present through our conditioning, through our experience. That's what we show as our way of navigating the world. And we are uncomfortable with other energies, other qualities, other kinds of intelligence, other flavors of aliveness, other songs. And as things in our atmosphere get more quiet and there start to be these natural unfoldings, natural shifting and releasing, then the qualities that felt so uncomfortable as to be sometimes really, really raw, almost unbearable, we start to hear the living quality in it, to tune to that rather than to the intensity of it. We tune to the living quality in people and in qualities and in places and in situations and within and without, rather than to the surface presentation that we like or don't like or are in our personality attuned to or not. So we stop manipulating and reacting on the level of emotional charge and preference, and we start to tune into these deeper songs. After days of labor, mute in my consternations, I hear my song at last. So out of nowhere and by itself, something that is of you, that isn't of anyone else, that is your song, is heard, is tasted, you can say. To sing it is to let it be fully embodied in your self and in your life, in and out. It's to lose track of what divided in and out. And that's why then, he doesn't explain, but then the same line, the next sentence begins on the same line. And I sing, period, as we sing. the day turns, the trees move.
There's a poem that just keeps resonating with me, a poem by William Stafford, which the name of which I can't remember, but it's something like, sometimes for no reason you sing. Do you know the one?
Mm-hmm.
And it goes on saying, you know, you imagine a world where you go where you want to go. And then certain twisted monsters always bar the path, but that's where you get going best. And it's a lovely thing of the playfulness of that encounter. You know?
Mm.
And you can sort of imagine a child, you know, bopping along, making up their world as they go, and then, you know, hitting that thing that's fearful.
Mm.
But then that's when you get going best. It's like that's a... It's not, you know, there's no bashing down the monster or anything like that, but just some lovely, playful thing that comes out and, you know, is more life as possible.
Yeah. So skills get formed in that meeting, and what was poisonous or cutting into our flesh, it falls away. And so it's an empowerment, and it's a lightening of our load. And it's an integration of qualities that we had thought were forbidden, that we had thought would kill us. Okay, one last.
Well, William Stafford and Thomas, Wendell Berry, good friends, and both people very close to the land that they lived on, Wendell Berry, a farmer in place for 40, 50 years.
Yep.
Yeah, when I say it's not a metaphor, it comes out of a real deep sense of gratitude that I feel he has for the actual encounter in the land that happened with that wild creature.
Yeah.
And we sing that sense of hearing the song of that land and knowing it as his song in a way that's utterly inseparable.
And how his song, then, we usually think of human being as the intruder or something kind of extra that's going to bother the nature somehow or other. And here he's so in the nature and true nature that his song is alive enough that it's contributing to that. It is the we sing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not the intruder, the cancer on the planet kind of thing that we consider human beings to be currently.
And there's a very deep respect in all of his work, I feel, of what actually happens in a life. You know, he's actual walking that land and his words directly coming out of his lived experience. His lived experience is the poem.
Yeah.
Separation.
Yeah. But he leaves it open for people then who their calling isn't to live on the land.
Yes.
Their calling might be more people or animals or ideas or whatever field.
Mm-hmm.
It's still a field. It's still a where they can sit among the trees, etc.
Yeah.
So for him, it is his practice is about that. But he opens it enough for us that we can know that it's not that I have to go back and buy land in Georgia where I grew up and farm for 40 years and then I can.
Mm-hmm.
It's what is my field, what is my land now, and where does that lead me?
It's the example that your actual life will open to poetry for you, wherever you are.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was just wondering, Jane, Is when he says his song comes, does that mean his path? Or is that something different?
It's almost more his freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The fruition of the path. So it's a second path, we can say, because it's not an ending point.
Mm.
But it's a really different, another dimension, we can say. That is free.
It's also interesting to consider the idea of song lines.
Yeah.
The Aboriginal song lines.
Yeah.
that the relationship between the material land and song
is
negligible. They are the same thing.
Yeah.
And how, just thinking of the word indigenous you used, or native in the other talk about Wendell Berry, and that we are native and indigenous wherever we are, how does our song become our song line in our life?
Is there anyone else who wants to say something before we end? I think just with this, the last comment of Melissa here with the song lines, and following on what Karen said, asked about the song, is that his path? I think it is beautiful to feel how freedom in this case as a song that is a person's song that then we sing, that is sung, that is not just for the person alone. How the individual walking the path towards freedom, and then that coming to fruit, doesn't only affect that individual, and doesn't only affect in a mechanical way, mechanistic way, the people who happen to bump up against that person, but in a much wider, freer way. It can have real effects. Maybe almost as a metaphor with there's the way that the old physics works is applicable for a certain level of size, but when we get tiny, then it doesn't make sense anymore. There's the quantum physics that no one really seems to be understand or explain. But with the spiritual experience and especially freedom, the subtlety, maybe it's such a fine level that it is, there are different laws that actually apply and make sense, that can possibly embrace the more gross levels, but certainly affect them. So thank you for being here.